All right, so let's take a look at this mountain of research papers you sent over. Looks like we're going deep into advanced materials and engineering simulations today.
Yeah, it's a fascinating mix, really. We've got everything from functionally graded materials to analyzing bridge vibrations, and even some really interesting work on how 3D printing is getting a sustainability boost.
Well, you know me, I love to dig into the details. So let's start with those functionally graded materials, or FGMs. I've got to say, the whole concept is pretty mind-blowing. Imagine a material that gradually transitions from one composition to another. It sounds almost like something out of science fiction.
It does, doesn't it? But the applications are very real. Think about aerospace components that need to withstand extreme heat on one side, but still maintain their strength on the other. That's where FGMs really shine. This first paper we're looking at here, well, it digs into how we can model these complex materials using software like ABAQUS.
Okay, so I'm familiar with ABAQUS, but how do they actually define those changing properties within the model? It seems incredibly complex.
Right, well, they're using something called user subroutines. It's a way to define very specific and complex material behaviors that go beyond the standard capabilities of the software.
So they're essentially writing custom code snippets that tell ABAQUS how the material composition should vary within the structure.
Exactly. In this case, they're using a subroutine called USDFLD to define how those material properties of the FGM change from point to point. They're using a power law distribution for that change, which ensures a smooth and predictable transition.
It sounds like a very elegant solution to a very complex problem. But it's not just about defining the material, it's also about making sure the model accurately captures how the FGM behaves under stress. I mean, cracking is a major concern with any structural material, right?
Absolutely. And with FGMs, you've got that added complexity of the transition zone between different materials. So to tackle that, they did a lot of work on mesh sensitivity analysis, making sure that the size and type of elements used in their finite element model weren't influencing the results, especially when it came to predicting crack initiation and propagation.
I see. So a finer mesh would give more accurate results, but it would also increase the computational cost. It's always a trade-off.
Exactly. They ended up using C3D8R elements, which are known for their accuracy in damage analysis. They also really emphasized the importance of choosing the right number of Gauss points for those calculations.
That attention to detail is impressive. But did they just rely on simulations, or did they try to validate their model against real-world results?
Oh, they definitely validated it. They actually compared their simulations to experimental results from a study published just last year in 2023 on aluminum silicon carbide FGMs under tension. They wanted to make sure everything lined up.
That's great. So they're not just working in a theoretical vacuum, they're grounding their simulations in real-world observations.
Right, and that's really important, especially when you're working with cutting-edge materials like this. What's exciting is that this research is giving engineers a powerful tool to analyze how those FGMs will behave under different conditions. They can predict things like critical crack length, estimate failure loads, and even figure out the best way to distribute the material within a component for maximum strength.
So we're talking about lighter, stronger aircraft components or more resilient heat shields for spacecraft. This research is really opening up a whole new world of possibilities.
It is. Okay, so let's switch gears a bit and look at this next paper, which is all about assessing bridge health using the vibrations caused by passing vehicles.
That sounds pretty futuristic, like something out of a spy movie. How does that even work?
Well, it's all based on the idea that every bridge has a unique vibrational signature. And changes to that signature can indicate damage. Think about it. Bridges are constantly under stress from traffic, from weather, just from the passage of time. So being able to efficiently assess their health is absolutely crucial, both for safety and to prevent those catastrophic failures we hear about sometimes.
Right, I get that part. But analyzing those vibrations has got to be incredibly complex, right?
Yeah.
You've got all that noise from the traffic, the road surface, the vehicles themselves. How do they filter out all that noise to isolate the signals that actually matter?
That's a great question, and that's exactly the challenge this research tries to address. They've developed some really sophisticated mathematical models to account for all those factors: road roughness, vehicle characteristics, everything.
So they're creating a sort of baseline healthy vibration signature for each bridge, and then looking for deviations from that baseline.
Exactly, but they've gone even further than that. They're actually using a technique called variational mode decomposition, or VMD, to filter out that noise and zero in on the vibrations that are specifically linked to the bridge's structure.
Okay, I'm familiar with the general concept of signal decomposition. But how does VMD stand out in this particular application?
Well, imagine trying to listen to a single conversation in a really crowded room. VMD is like having the ability to isolate that single conversation, filtering out all the surrounding chatter. In this case, it allows the researchers to separate the bridge's vibration signal into its core components and identify the specific frequencies that are associated with potential damage.
Ah, so they're finding the damage frequencies hidden within all that noise. Fascinating. And they were able to do this even with traffic moving across the bridge.
Yeah, they tested this technique with vehicles moving at different speeds, and they found it was still effective. In fact, higher speeds, which you might think would add more noise, actually made it easier to detect those damage signatures.
Really? That's surprising. I would have thought higher speeds would just create more chaos in the data.
Right, it seems counterintuitive, but it turns out that VMD is incredibly good at filtering out speed-related noise. So what this means is that you could potentially have a system where routine traffic flow actually helps monitor bridge health. No need for special inspections or lane closures.
Now that would be a game changer for infrastructure management. It could save time, money, and even lives by allowing for more proactive and targeted bridge maintenance.
Absolutely. This research is a great example of how those cutting-edge signal processing techniques are really opening up those new possibilities for monitoring and maintaining the structures we rely on every single day.
All right, this is already blowing my mind, and we've only just scratched the surface. Let's move on to another paper that focuses on damage detection. But this time, we're going into the lab, and we're adding a healthy dose of machine learning to the mix.
Sounds good. So in this research, they're taking a slightly different approach. They're focusing on very controlled experiments in the lab and leveraging the power of data analysis to pinpoint the location of damage within a structure.
Okay, so a more controlled version of that bridge experiment. What's the advantage of that approach?
Well, by carefully controlling the load and the environment, they can really isolate the effects of damage on the structure's vibrations much more precisely. And this lets them generate really high-quality data that they can use to train a machine learning algorithm.
Oh, machine learning. I knew it had to come into play somewhere. So how did they actually train the algorithm to detect damage in this case?
Okay, so they used a technique called the random decrement technique, or RDT for short. It's a way to analyze the decay of a structure's vibrations over time. Essentially, it captures the unique dynamic fingerprint of that structure.
So they're looking for anomalies in how the structure vibrates after it's been excited in some way.
Yes, exactly. And the key takeaway here is that damage at a specific location, well, it actually alters the statistical properties of the vibration response. It creates a distinct signature that the RDT can pick up on.
Okay, so damage leaves a trace, like a fingerprint at a crime scene. How do they use that information to actually pinpoint the location of the damage?
All right, so they calculated something called correlation coefficients between the vibration signals that were recorded at different points along the structure. Damage basically disrupts these correlations, creating a pattern that the machine learning algorithm can learn to recognize.
Correlation coefficients. Remind me again how those work.
Sure. They measure how strongly two sets of data are related to each other. In this case, they're comparing the vibration signals from different sensors placed along the structure. If the structure's healthy, those signals will be highly correlated. But if there's damage, those relationships will get disrupted.
Got it. So the machine learning algorithm learns to recognize those disrupted correlation patterns and can then predict where the damage is located based on new vibration data.
Exactly. It's like training a detective to spot those subtle clues that others might miss. This research is a great example of how combining those sophisticated experimental techniques with machine learning can significantly enhance our ability to detect damage early on before it becomes a major problem.
This is incredible. It seems like we're moving towards a future where structures can practically diagnose themselves. Okay, let's move on to a paper that delves into the world of precision machining, and specifically how nanofluids can improve performance when working with some notoriously difficult materials.
Yeah, this one is interesting. They were working with Inconel 718, which is a nickel-based superalloy, known for its exceptional strength and resistance to heat and corrosion, but it's a real headache to machine using traditional methods.
Right, I've heard about Inconel. It's used in all sorts of extreme environments, like jet engines and rocket components. But what are nanofluids and how do they apply them to machining?
Well, nanofluids are basically fluids that contain tiny particles, nanoparticles, suspended in them. These particles can enhance the fluid's properties in various ways. In this case, they were looking at how nanofluids could improve the lubrication and cooling during the machining process.
I see. So they're basically creating a super coolant to tame this super alloy. How did they actually set up the experiment?
They focused on a technique called minimum quantity lubrication, or MQL, which delivers a very precise and minimal amount of lubricant directly to the cutting zone. It's already a more sustainable approach compared to those traditional flood coolant methods, but they took it a step further by incorporating a hybrid nanofluid into the mix.
A hybrid nanofluid, what does that mean?
Well, they combined multi-walled carbon nanotubes, or MWCNTs, with aluminum oxide nanoparticles. It created a special blend designed to enhance the cooling, the lubrication, and the heat transfer during machining.
So they're really fine-tuning the properties of that coolant at a nanoscale level.
Yeah.
Did they just look at the machining itself, or did they try to model and predict the results as well?
They did both. They carefully measured things like cutting forces, surface roughness, and tool wear during the machining. But then they also used AI to gain deeper insights.
Oh, AI. I should have known. What kind of AI wizardry did they employ in this case?
They actually used two different techniques. First, they used artificial neural networks, or ANNs, which are great for learning complex patterns from data.
Right, ANNs. Those are like the workhorses of machine learning these days.
Exactly. And they trained those ANNs on data from their machining experiments so that the AI could learn to predict how different parameters would affect the outcome. But then they also use something called adaptive neurofuzzy inference systems, or ANFIS, to enhance their predictions even further.
ANFIS. Okay, that's a new one for me. How does that work?
It combines the learning capabilities of ANNs with the nuanced reasoning of fuzzy logic.
Fuzzy logic. That's the logic of maybe and somewhat, right?
Right.
I remember that from our deep dive on control systems. How does that apply to machining?
Well, in machining, there are often a lot of subtle variations and uncertainties that traditional true or false logic struggles to handle. Fuzzy logic allows that ANFIS model to embrace those nuances, which can lead to more robust and accurate predictions, especially when you're dealing with a process as complex as machining.
So it's like adding a layer of intuition to the AI's decision-making process. And did this supercoolant, coupled with AI, actually deliver?
The results were impressive. The hybrid nanofluid significantly reduced those cutting forces, improved surface roughness, and it even extended the tool life. So yeah, a more efficient and sustainable machining process for that Inconel 718.
That's a huge win.
Yeah.
More efficient machining means less waste, lower cost, and maybe even opening up new possibilities for designing with these high-performance materials. Okay, before we wrap up this first part of our deep dive, let's explore one last area where innovation is really taking off. Composite materials enhanced with nanofillers, like graphene and carbon nanotubes.
All right, so composites are already known for their strength-to-weight ratio, but those nanofillers can really push their performance even further. This research specifically looked at how graphene nanoplatelets, or GNPs, and multi-walled carbon nanotubes, or MWCNTs, affect the mechanical properties of a composite that's made from a blend of epoxy and polylactic acid, or PLA.
PLA, that's a biodegradable polymer, right? So they're not just looking at enhancing performance, they're also trying to keep things sustainable.
Exactly. They were going for a high-performance composite with a lower environmental impact. And to do that, they tested different weight percentages of the GMPs and the MWCNTs to see how each nanofiller influenced the composite's tensile strength and its modulus.
Tensile strength, that's how much it can resist stretching. And modulus, that's a measure of its stiffness, right?
You got it.
Yeah.
They were essentially looking to see which nanofiller would give the composite the best strength and stiffness boost.
And was there a clear winner?
It's interesting. Both the GMPs and the MWCNTs did enhance the composite's properties, but the GMPs generally outperformed the MWCNTs at the same weight percentage.
So graphene takes the crown in this case. But why do you think that is? Was it just that the graphene was inherently stronger?
Well, it's a little more nuanced than that. They actually used scanning electron microscopy to look at how the nanofillers were dispersed within that PLA matrix and how they interacted with the surrounding polymer at a microscopic level.
Ah, so the arrangement of those nanofillers within the material matters as much as their individual properties.
Absolutely. What they found was that the GMPs tended to disperse more uniformly within the PLA matrix, which created a stronger bond between the two materials and a more efficient way to transfer stress throughout the structure. It's not just about choosing the strongest nanofiller. It's about making sure it's integrated into the material in the best way possible.
That makes perfect sense. It's like building a house. doesn't matter how strong the individual bricks are, if the mortar holding them together is weak. So this research is really highlighting the importance of those microscopic details when you're designing and optimizing composite materials.
Absolutely. And they actually took this a step further by using finite element analysis, or FEA, to simulate the mechanical behavior of those composites. They wanted to see how their experimental results matched up with the simulations.
FEA, that's like a virtual lab for material scientists, right?
It is. It lets them test and refine their designs in a computer environment before they have to create physical prototypes. It's an incredibly powerful tool, especially when you're dealing with the complexity of these nano-enhanced composites.
This is incredible. I'm already feeling inspired by all the ingenuity and possibilities these papers have revealed. And this is just the beginning, right?
We've only scratched the surface. There's so much more to explore in these exciting fields. So stay tuned for the next part of our deep dive, where we'll dig even deeper into the research that's shaping a more sustainable, resilient, and technologically advanced future.
Welcome back. You know, before we move on, I wanted to pick up on something you mentioned earlier about structures being able to practically diagnose themselves.
Oh, yeah. The idea of self-diagnosing structures. I'm all ears. It really captured my imagination.
Right. And this next paper dives right into that concept. It's all about using data analysis and machine learning to detect damage early on, potentially even preventing those catastrophic failures before they happen.
Sounds amazing. How did they approach it?
Okay, so they used a simple beam structure in a lab setting, subjected it to a moving load, and very carefully recorded all the vibration data.
Ah, so kind of like a controlled version of that bridge inspection technique we discussed, but yeah, with machine learning added in. Exactly. That controlled environment lets them really isolate the effects of damage on the beam's vibrations, and that gives them nice, clean data to train a machine learning algorithm to recognize the signs of damage.
I'm always impressed by how researchers are finding new and innovative ways to apply machine learning to these engineering challenges. So what kind of algorithm did they use in this case?
They used something called the random decrement technique, or RDT. It's a way to analyze how the beam's vibrations decay over time. You can almost think of it as capturing the unique heartbeat of the structure.
Okay, so damage creates a kind of arrhythmia in the structure's heartbeat.
That's a great way to put it. And the beauty of RDT is that it can pick up on those subtle changes in the vibration patterns that we might completely miss with the naked eye. And then they feed that RDT data into a machine learning algorithm. So the algorithm can learn to recognize the specific signatures associated with different types of damage at different locations.
Ah, so it's like training a detective to spot those nearly invisible clues. They sift through all the data and find the pieces that point to the culprit.
Precisely. And the potential applications here are just vast. Imagine being able to monitor things like aircraft components, pipelines, even buildings in real time using sensors and these algorithms. We could detect damage long before it becomes visible or causes a serious problem.
That kind of preventative maintenance could really revolutionize safety standards across so many industries. Okay, let's switch gears again and talk about a paper that draws inspiration from nature to enhance the design of 3D printed structures.
Biomimicry. Yeah, it's always fascinating to see how engineers are finding solutions by observing how nature has already solved similar problems.
Right. Nature's had millions of years to perfect its designs through evolution, so it makes sense to try and learn from that. What did they focus on in this research?
They were looking at how to incorporate those nature-inspired internal architectures into 3D printed components to make them stronger and more efficient.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What kind of nature-inspired designs are we talking about? What are they mimicking?
Think about the intricate structures you see in bones or honeycombs, even spider webs. They're incredibly strong and lightweight because of their internal architecture. This research specifically looked at two types of patterns: reticular, which is like a network of struts, and rhomboidal, which is more like a honeycomb.
So they're essentially building microscopic truss systems, or honeycombs, inside the 3D printed part itself. It's like a hidden architecture.
Exactly. They used parametric modeling and structural analysis tools to really optimize those geometries, making sure they got that perfect balance of strength, weight, and material usage.
It's amazing how much computational power is being applied to material design these days.
Yeah.
They're fine-tuning those structures at such a tiny scale.
And what material were they using for this?
They chose to work with PLA, a biodegradable polymer that's really common in 3D printing.
So not only are they creating stronger, more efficient structures, they're doing it sustainably with a material that has a lower environmental impact. Exactly. So they're not stopping at those computer simulations. They actually 3D printed these structures with all the different internal architectures, and then they put them to the test.
They brought those bio-inspired designs into the real world. What happened?
Well, they found that those 3D printed parts with the optimized internal architectures were significantly stronger and stiffer compared to solid parts made from the same material.
So greater strength with less material. That's a huge win for efficiency and sustainability. This research really highlights the power of looking to nature for inspiration. And when you combine that with 3D printing and advanced modeling techniques, well, you get some truly innovative solutions.
I agree. It opens up all sorts of possibilities for lightweight, high-performance structures. Everything from aerospace components to medical implants could benefit.
Okay, so let's shift gears again and talk about salt.
Salt, as in the stuff we sprinkle on our food.
Well, not exactly. This research is about the behavior of salt rocks deep underground, particularly a type called red sylvanite. It's really important for understanding how to design and build things like salt mines and underground storage caverns.
Ah, I see where you're going with this. Those structures are built within salt formations, which seems counterintuitive since salt dissolves in water.
Right, but deep underground, salt rock behaves very differently. It's solid and seemingly stable, but there's a catch.
Creep.
Creep. Okay, now you're making me think of scary movies.
Huh? No, not that kind of creep. In material science, creep means that a material slowly deforms over time under constant stress. Think about sitting on a soft couch for too long. It slowly starts to take the shape of your body. That's kind of like creep, except with salt rock, it happens much more slowly.
Okay, I get it. So it's like a slow motion version of the material stretching or bending under pressure. I can definitely see how that would be a big concern for anything built underground. Absolutely. And this research delves into how we can actually model that creep behavior with some pretty sophisticated mathematical models.
So they're trying to predict how these salt formations will deform over very long periods, like decades or even centuries.
Exactly. They use models called elastic viscoplastic models, which sound complicated, but they're designed to capture the fact that salt rock can deform both elastically, meaning it can spring back to its original shape, and plastically, meaning it changes shape permanently. And then you add in the time-dependent aspect of creep. It makes things really tricky to model.
So it's not a one-size-fits-all situation. There's no single perfect model that works for everything.
Right. They looked at several different viscoplastic laws, each of which has its own strengths and weaknesses when it comes to capturing certain aspects of that creep behavior. The engineers need to choose the right model based on the specific type of salt rock and the time scale they're considering.
So this research is about giving engineers the tools to understand and predict how those underground structures will behave over the long term.
Exactly. And it's essential for ensuring their safety and stability. It's a great example of how advanced modeling techniques can really help us design more reliable structures, even in challenging environments like those found deep underground. All right, for our last paper today, let's shift gears one final time and talk about 3D printing. This research really pushes the boundaries of what's possible in terms of material design. It's all about going beyond just printing shapes and actually engineering materials with specific internal architectures to achieve certain properties.
3D printing has already revolutionized so much, especially when it comes to prototyping and small-scale manufacturing. But this takes it to a whole new level. It's about leveraging that precision and control you get with 3D printing to create materials with really tailored properties, almost like building with microscopic Lego blocks.
Okay, so I'm picturing these tiny, intricate structures within the 3D printed part itself. What kind of structures are we talking about?
They looked at two main types: reticular patterns, which are like interconnected struts, and rhomboidal patterns, which are more like honeycombs.
Ah, so they're building these tiny truss systems and honeycombs right inside the material. It's like a hidden architecture that gives the part its strength.
That's a great way to describe it. And they use those computer-aided design tools to really optimize those geometries, balancing the strength, the weight, and the material usage.
So they're fine-tuning the internal structure of those 3D printed parts at a microscopic level.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling. And what material were they using to print these structures?
They went with PLA, a biodegradable polymer that's commonly used in 3D printing. So they were thinking about sustainability as well.
Sustainable and high performance, that's a winning combination. But did those tiny internal structures really make a difference?
They did. They conducted tensile tests to see how the 3D printed parts would perform under stress compared to solid parts made from the same material. And those parts with the optimized internal architectures were much stronger and stiffer.
So they were able to achieve greater strength, with less material. It's a win-win for efficiency and for sustainability.
Absolutely. This research shows how 3D printing is evolving from just creating shapes to engineering materials with custom properties at a microscopic level. And it opens up a whole world of possibilities.
Okay, so let's jump back into this treasure trove of research.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how these papers all seem to connect in some way.
It really is. We're going from bridges to nanomaterials to salt mines. It's a whirlwind tour of cutting-edge engineering.
And speaking of zooming in, you know, one of the papers that really grabbed my attention was the one on functionally graded materials, those FGMs.
Ah, yes. FGMs, always a fascinating topic. Creating materials that seamlessly transition from one composition to another, it's amazing.
It is. But I imagine trying to simulate those materials must be a real challenge. How do you even define the properties of something that's constantly changing throughout its structure?
Well, that's where those user subroutines we talked about earlier come in. This paper used a specific subroutine called USDFLD. It lets the researchers define those really customized material behaviors.
So they're essentially writing custom code that tells the software, like ABAQUS, how the material should change from one point to the next.
Precisely. They're creating a material gradient based on a set of instructions. In this case, they used a power law distribution to ensure a smooth transition.
Very clever.
Yeah.
But it's not just about defining the material. You also need to make sure the model accurately predicts how that FGM will behave in the real world. Cracking, for example, that's always a concern with structural materials, right?
Absolutely. And with FGMs, you've got that extra layer of complexity because of the transition zone between those different materials. So to deal with that, they did a lot of mesh sensitivity analysis. They wanted to make sure the size and type of elements used in the model weren't skewing the results when it came to predicting crack behavior.
They really wanted to make sure those simulations were reliable. But did they go beyond just the simulations and try to validate their model with real-world data?
They did. They compared their simulations to experimental results from a recent study on aluminum silicon carbide FGMs under tension. They wanted to ensure everything lined up.
That's great. So they're not just working in a theoretical bubble.
Hmm.
So what are the big takeaways from this research? Why should our listeners be excited about FGMs?
Well, this research gives engineers a powerful new tool to analyze how these materials will perform under different conditions. They can predict critical crack lengths, estimate failure loads. They can even optimize the material distribution within a component for maximum strength and durability.
So we're talking lighter, stronger aircraft components, more resilient heat shields, maybe even customized medical implants that integrate seamlessly with the body.
Exactly. It really opens up a whole new world of possibilities. And, you know, speaking of pushing boundaries, let's talk about sustainability for a moment. One of the papers you sent over looked at using recycled materials in 3D printing.
Yes. I was really interested in that one. It's great to see 3D printing being used to promote a more circular economy.
It is. This particular study looked at recycled PTG, a type of polyester that's commonly used in things like water bottles. They went through the whole process from shredding the plastic to creating pellets and then extruding it into new filament for 3D printing.
So they're taking those single-use plastic bottles and giving them a second life as a high-tech material. It's brilliant. But the big question is, how does that recycled PTG compare to virgin PTG in terms of performance?
Right. Can it actually handle the demands of 3D printing? Well, to find out, they did a bunch of tests. Tensile tests, compression tests, impact tests, the whole works.
They really put it through its paces. So what was the verdict?
The results were actually very encouraging. The recycled PTG performed really well overall. There were some slight differences in certain properties, but for many 3D printing applications, it could definitely be a viable alternative to virgin PTG.
That's fantastic. Less reliance on virgin plastics, a more circular economy. I love it. Okay, well, this has been an incredible deep dive. We've covered so much ground, from self-diagnosing structures to bio-inspired designs, nanomaterials, salt mines, the future of 3D printing. It's clear that materials science and engineering are pushing the boundaries of what's possible in so many ways.
It really is. It's been inspiring to see the ingenuity and the creativity of all these researchers. They're developing solutions to some of the world's toughest challenges, and they're doing it with an eye towards sustainability and a better future.
What really stood out to me was the spirit of collaboration and innovation that runs through all of this research. The willingness to learn from nature, to embrace new technologies like AI and 3D printing. It's a reminder that we have the power to shape our own future. It's not just something that happens to us.
Well said. So to our listeners out there, we encourage you to stay curious, keep exploring, and never stop asking questions. The world of material science and engineering is full of amazing discoveries waiting to be made.
Who knows, maybe you'll be the one to make that next breakthrough. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you've enjoyed exploring these incredible topics as much as we have. Until next time, keep learning, keep innovating, and keep pushing the boundaries of what's possible.